I'm sure this week with an attack right outside the Houses of Parliament, the role of government has been, well, on all of our minds, as Keith has said. What's a government good for? Helping us leave the EU? Making sure we have enough houses, enough schools, enough hospitals, enough runways, enough roads? I'm sure we all appreciate a system that catches and finds that show-off driver who zooms past us down the M5. And we all love a system, don't we, that makes sure that we know that we haven't had our five a day, now 10 a day fruit and vegetable portions. The great benefits of government, keeping an eye on us. Asked about life on other planets, Woody Allen said, "I believe there is something out there watching us. Unfortunately, it's the government." And maybe we think like that sometimes. Maybe that's why we don't always excitedly run downstairs the moment our tax relief, our tax return hits the doormat and kind of rip it open with glee, delighted that we're going to be parting our hard-earned cash with our hard-earned cash. Perhaps that's why we dislike government in part. Maybe we don't have confidence in the state. Maybe we think that they don't spend our money well. As one person said, "Sadly, we don't get all the government we pay for." Now, scanning through Romans 12 from this morning, Paul the Apostle has been making the point that we're not Christians on our own. We don't do the Christian life by ourselves. As well as living in relationship with God and with ourselves, we live too, don't we, in relationship with one another. But we also live in relationship with our enemies. But this evening, we're looking at the fact that we also live in relationship with what we have to put up with, the state we're in. We live under a government. We live under the authorities. So the questions that we're asking this evening are, why should we obey the state? That's from verses 1 to 3. Who says so? And anyway, what does the state do? That's in verses 4 to 7. So have a look down with me at verses 1 to 3. And let's just remind ourselves. Everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, he who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong. Do you want to be free from fear of the one in authority? Then do what is right, and he will commend you. So if the question is, where does the state get its authority from? The answer is unequivocally God. God is the governor of governments, if you like. Three times in verses 1 to 2, I wonder if you noticed, Paul affirms that the state's authority is derived from God. That's why we should obey the state. And this means that, believe it or not, the state is a divine institution with divine authority. So Christians are not to be anarchists wanting no government. Government is good because it's from God. We should therefore have a positive view towards the existence of government, unlike some of the views I was giving at the start. You know, it must be hard being a Christian in a place like Somalia, which, despite some reform and democratic institutions starting in 2012, Somalia, for the last 25 years, has by and large had no strong, recognisable government in control. And therefore God's authority is not visibly seen and adhered to in Somalia. Paul says that God has established governments as governor and king over every government and over every kingdom. He is the authority behind governments. So we are called to respect governments as Christians and to, yes, obey the state and to pray for the state, to keep the laws of our country, from paying inheritance tax to correct copywriting, from respecting public property to doing jury service. And as a sign that we recognise God's authority, we should also pray for our government. We read in 1 Timothy 2, Paul saying, "Pray for kings and all those in authority, that we might live peaceful and quiet lives in all godliness and holiness, so that all men can know the truth." By praying for government, we pray for the chance to live in a country where freedom prevails and where missionary work is possible. And so it is important to pray for Theresa May and her cabinet as they make important decisions to guide us through what is politically a very uncertain future. And pray for Donald Trump and his administration, that they might know that their authority is from God. But by recognizing that any government's authority is from God, does that mean that every Herod or Nero in New Testament times, or every Hitler or Stalin or Idi Amin or Pol Pot in our times were personally appointed by God? Does it somehow mean that God is responsible for their behavior and in no circumstances should they ever be resisted? Well, of course not. Paul simply means that every human authority, your boss or your department head, your local MP, our prime minister and government, every human authority is derived from God's authority. Therefore, we can say to our governors what Jesus said to Pilate: "You would have no authority over me if it were not given you from above." Pilate, of course, misused his authority, but it was certainly given to him by God. Yet precisely because this is God's authority, Paul goes on to call for submission. Verse 2, "Do not rebel against what God has instituted. For," verse 3, "rulers hold no terror for those who do right." Well, that's easy for you to say, Paul. You lived under a Christian government with Christian rules and Christian... No, wait a minute. No, he didn't. Paul lived under the Roman occupation of Israel. Paul lived under the Roman oppression of his people. The miscarrying of justice in condemning Jesus. And remember, Paul had to appeal to Caesar because it seemed that local Roman courts were not just. Now, does anyone find that a bit odd? First, how can Paul, with all he's been through, say that we should submit to the authorities? And yet he does, because he knows that they are appointed by God. But second, how can Paul say that universally, verse 3, rulers commend those who do right and punish those who do wrong? Do they? Rome would have seemed unjust to both Paul and to Paul's readers. Now, in saying this, Paul is in fact stating the divine ideal, not the human reality. He is saying how things should be rather than the fact that every government is perfect. Elsewhere in the Bible, in Revelation 13, rather than Romans 13, the state, or at least secular authority, is portrayed as it really is, the beast out of the sea, a type of the Antichrist, all that comes against God's purposes. John Stott calls this a sort of satanic parody of Romans 13. But both passages are true. Clearly, not all governments uphold justice, and not all governments should be submitted to, if by obeying our government, we are forced to disobey God. If that's the choice, then we must obey God. Paul does not mean that governments are always right. I used to work for a church in South Africa, and as most of you will know, before 1994, South Africa had a government that used the Bible to justify racial segregation between blacks and whites under the apartheid regime. Apparently, on the 8th of October 1985, Michael Cassidy, the founder of the Christian-based business African Enterprise, was granted an interview with President P.W. Botha in Pretoria. And it was during the National Initiative for Reconciliation, and Michael Cassidy, he hoped for signs of repentance and the assurance that the apartheid regime would be dismantled. Well, did he get that? What happened? What did President P.W. Botha say to him? As soon as he walked into the room, the president began by standing to read this part of Romans 13. He who rebels against the authorities is rebelling against what God has instituted. So the president obviously thought that Romans 13 gave unequivocal support of the nationalist government's apartheid policy. But it's not saying that. We must obey governments and submit to authority as they're instituted by God, but only up to the point where we are not disobeying God himself. As the Apostle Peter said to the Sanhedrin in Acts chapter 5, we must obey God rather than men. Think too of the Hebrew midwives in Exodus 1 who feared God and did not do what the king of Egypt had told them and let the boys live. Or remember Meshach, Shadrach and Abednego refusing to bow down to Nebuchadnezzar's image in Daniel 3. So to sum up, as Christians, we submit to the state's authority. It's God-given authority, which is authority given from on high. But occasionally we may consider civil protest or even civil disobedience if and only if we would have to disobey God by obeying our government. So that's our first big question. Why do we obey the state? Because its authority is derived from God's authority. Our second big question is, what is the state there to do? What is its role? Have a look with me at verses 4 to 7. For he, the state, is God's servant to do you good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword for nothing. He is God's servant, an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. Therefore, it is necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but also because of conscience. This is also why you pay taxes, for the authorities are God's servants who give their full time to governing. Give everyone what you owe him. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, then revenue. If respect, then respect. If honour, then honour. So just as Paul affirmed three times that the state has authority from God, he also affirms three times that the state's ministry is from God. Three times we read that the government is God's servant governing for God. The word used for servant is, yet again, this word diakonos. It seems to keep on coming up in our sermon series, where we get the term deacon from. Literally, someone who carries out the commands of another, a servant of God. So they are God's servants carrying out what ministry? Verse 4, God's servants to do you good and God's servant to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. So the government are to restrain and punish evil and to promote and reward good. Now, everyone knows that the state restrains and punishes evil. And because of this, verse 5, it is necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, literally in order to avoid God's wrath, but also because of conscience. Our consciences recognize the state's God-given role. Now, whilst we're not told exactly what sort of sanctions and penalties the state might employ, this passage has little bearing on, for instance, the morality of the US's Guantanamo Bay Detention Center in Cuba, which still has 41 inmates, or has little bearing on the UK government's controversial 28-day terror detention laws. But on the other hand, we are given a hint in verse 4 when Paul writes that God's servant does not bear the sword for nothing. It's quite clear from the context and from the use of the same word in chapter 8 that Paul meant the sword as a symbol of capital punishment, the right of the state to execute criminals under certain circumstances. And topically, maybe you could push that and say the right of the state to shoot dead an attacker intent on killing civilians. John Stott, again, points out that such a symbol bears witness to the state's solemn, God-given authority to the unique sanctity of human life. The state, certainly in Rome, had the power of life and death in its hands. But since the punishment of evil is ultimately God's business, this means that at the present time, the law courts do God's business. The law courts, therefore, have a God-given responsibility. Now, the issue of capital punishment itself is a lot more complex than merely understanding Romans 13, and we haven't really got time to go into it. But if you do want to do a study, you'll need to dip into Genesis 9 and the sanctity of life in Noah's covenant, also in the Levitical law, and the new covenant fulfillment of that law. But as well as punishing evil, Paul also says that the state's role is to reward and promote good, to publicly honour those who serve their country. And of course, we know from ancient inscriptions that this was commonplace in Roman times. What about today in the UK? Well, we do give Victoria Cross medals to soldiers, and we have a system of awards given by the Queen each year. You would have seen the latest list. Sir Mo Farah, Sir Andy Murray, Dame Patricia Routledge, Dame Naomi Harris. Even today, our awards system seem to come from the biblical idea of governments rewarding good. And how else do governments promote good? Well, hopefully, any godly government will want to preserve a society's values. They'll want citizens to share in welfare through voluntary programs. And of course, any good government will provide public goods like street lighting and a police force and rubbish collection and education and, controversially, a national health service. And even more controversially, a hefty chunk of our banks post the financial crisis. Why are they called public goods? Well, because, and here's the economist coming out, because they're good. They're there for our benefit. They're things that can't easily be provided by individuals. And how are these public goods paid for? Verse 6, through, wait for it, taxes. Ah, yes, that beautiful word we all love to hear, taxes. You know, the Lord giveth and the inland revenue taketh away. What's your favourite tax? Which one do you like paying the most? Are you a lover of VAT or more a capital gains tax kind of person? Benjamin Franklin said famously that in this world nothing can be certain except death and taxes. But it's also said that in fact there are only two types of people who complain about taxes: men and women. The Californian preacher Ray Steadman, he tells the story in one of his books that being resentful about making a tax return to the Internal Revenue Service in the US, the IRS, he accidentally wrote it to the Infernal Revenue Service, the Hellish Revenue Service. They didn't answer, but they took his money anyway. But then he read in verse 6 and verse 7 these words, and he realized that paying tax is actually a God-given duty to fund the projects of God's servant, the government. So second time round, he sent his money to the Eternal Revenue Service, perhaps a bit nearer the mark. Now, whilst it's true that Jesus did say that we only pay taxes so as not to offend the authorities in the slightly bizarre fish incident of Matthew 17, he also said in Matthew 22 that we should give to Caesar what is Caesar's, i.e. tax, and to God what is God's. And Paul picks up on this here in Romans 13. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, then revenue. If respect, then respect. If honour, then honour. Whatever we owe, we should pay. So paying taxes, paying what we owe, is a God-given duty done for the glory of God. Paul seems to imply that our taxes are not our money. They belong to the state as God's servant. I bet your tax return will never be the same again. Now, whilst tax avoidance through gift aid and trust funds is good stewardship, tax evasion, not paying what you owe, is ruled out by Paul in this passage. So, to sum up, God is the governor of governments. The state's authority comes from him. And second, governments are governing for God. They are God's servant, punishing evil and promoting good. What does this all mean for us? Well, first, we need to respect government. We may disagree with policies and we may deplore the people in office, but we need to respect the office itself, carrying out God's will, remembering that their authority is derived from God's authority. And by respecting, we also pray for our government. But second, we need to recognise the role of the government as God's servants, doing what God has sanctioned against evil and promoting good. So let's be the first to want to pay taxes. Christians should be the best citizens of all. Well, I don't know about you, but reading these verses and preparing this, I've been challenged in my attitude towards government. I'm sure you have as well. However God has spoken to us, let's just spend a moment in quiet. Help us to remember, our God, that every authority on earth is an authority derived from your authority, for all authority is given to you. Help us to recognise the role of the state in our country, governing on your behalf. Help us to recognise how they restrain all that is not of you and promote all that is good. Help us to be good citizens, able to understand why we have a government and how it relates to your ultimate authority. Amen.